morning. This is Radio Shalom coming to you through Planet FM 104.6. Shalom, Ruth.
Shalom.
Well, I'm delighted to have in the studio today Ruth Cleaver. Welcome.
Thank you.
And I want to ask Ruth, I met Ruth in the interfaith group, and I was absolutely fascinated, and everybody, when I asked this question, said, ask Ruth. So, Ruth, can you tell me how you got involved and why you got involved in the interfaith group?
Well, thanks for having me, Joan, because interfaith really is something close to my heart. And just a little bit about me, my funny accent, which is a bit of a hybrid. I'm from Canada. I'm from Montreal, Canada, but I've lived now in New Zealand for close to 30 years. My husband is from here. My children were all born here. And I've had an interest in interfaith really now, I could say, all my adult life. And coming to New Zealand in the late 80s, early 90s, there wasn't really much interfaith type activities happening. But myself, I was involved with a spiritual group that was doing interfaith seminars. And through the seminars that we were conducting, I met up with a group of about 10 or 12 people from different faith groups, from different faiths, who were very much like-minded in the sense that they had a feeling that religions should be working together and that we had something to offer society by collaborating to some level, by respecting each other, by showing a model of how religions should work together. And this, you could say, is both reactive and proactive in the sense that there's a lot of bad press about religions, and you know, people will say, oh, religion is the problem, religion's the cause of this war or this division. So we wanted to counter that perception, but also we feel that religions, through their values in service and in loving humanity, they have a lot to offer society in terms of modeling how people can overcome differences and work together for the common good. So if we really go back to around 2002, say myself with this group of about 10, 12 people, we started to feel that Auckland, as a major city in New Zealand, needed an organization that actually represented the voices of the religious community in the largest sense. So what we did was we actually hosted a meeting. It was held at the Holy Trinity Cathedral in Parnell, so we needed a big venue, and particularly with the help of the Baha'i organization, who had a good mailing list. In those days, we actually mailed letters as opposed to emails. We actually sent out an invitation letter to every religious organization and venue that we could find through the phone book and through websites and through everything, and just said, look, we're having this meeting. It was quite a good meeting. We had the Commissioner of Children at the time speaking. We were addressing certain social issues, but we were also saying we are looking for a mandate to establish an interfaith council in Auckland. And I think about 100 people came to that meeting, and we had breakout groups and discussion as well as our speakers. And the overriding feeling was, yes, this is something whose time has come. So our original group, together with a few that we picked up from that larger meeting,
on the way.
Yeah, we became an ad hoc committee, and we were tasked with creating a structure. Luckily for us, one of the people in that group, Dr. Mike Robertson, had just moved to Auckland from the Waikato, and he'd been involved with an interfaith group in the Waikato. So at that time, Waikato had an interfaith, kind of a casual interfaith group, as did Wellington, but they were the only ones that we knew of. And Mike, coming from the Waikato, brought with us a template constitution for an interfaith council. So that gave us something. We didn't use it verbatim, but we used it as a model. So within about 2 to 3 months of meetings, we'd come up with a constitution and a structure. And by June of 2003, we had our opening inaugural meeting. So the Auckland Interfaith Council was launched, and it's been registered with the Society for Charitable Trusts, and it's also registered with the Charities Commission and with the Inland Revenue. So anybody that's got too much money would like to donate to us, you can get a tax rebate.
So what did you put down as your values or your aims and objectives?
Right. We had a number of aims. It was to, you know, create a platform for dialogue. It is to address any issues of religious discrimination or persecution, and to also try to promote common universal values. So it's kind of got quite a broad aim, from almost an academic or theological aim to try to show what religions have in common and how they can work together, to a social justice type of aim, where if there is any group being targeted or somehow discriminated against, we felt that we could speak with a combined voice of all the faiths, saying, no, this is not right, and this is not what we want to see in New Zealand society. So
that's an important role.
A very important role. And also we wanted to be able to just create programs, seminars, conferences, you know, events, to give the platform for this type of thinking to develop on a grassroots level.
Did you find it easy to promote this? Was it taken up, or did you have to fight against a wave of indifference?
I think it's hard to generalize. For some people, this was natural. This was like breathing. But for others, it was something quite new. And sometimes people are unsure what it means. You know, are you asking me to give up my religion or change? No, we're asking you to be you and hold true to your beliefs. But let's see how we can recognize and work with other people of other faiths who also have their well-held beliefs. But we can find common areas that we can feel that we can collectively address. There are certain faiths that are more, you could say, open to this type of approach. And even within a faith, there are people who are very open to this and people who are very closed. So it's quite hard to generalize. So some people, their faith said, this is great, and please join this organization on behalf of our whole faith, and we will support you. Other people came and said, look, I'm here on my own. Please don't say that I'm representing the such and such faith, because I don't have their endorsement, but I feel this is important. And for some faiths, we can see over the 15 years that this organization has been running, the faith has moved more in the direction of recognizing the value of interfaith. So I'd say now, in 2017, an interfaith event is much more common, much more accepted, much more acceptable than when we first started in 2002.
Is it as strong in other areas of New Zealand as it is in Auckland?
It has grown and developed over the years. And so that now most cities of a certain size have, whether it's actually a formalized group or just a kind of an ad hoc group or a few people that are interested and meet together, there's usually something happening in many cities, particularly cities that have a more diverse population.
But I think my first introduction was going to a conference. Could you talk to us something about the conference and how it was organized?
Right, so one of the things, let me just backtrack to the start of our group. We had, back in 2003, we had a vice chair named Reverend Jenny Chalmers, and she's an Anglican vicar with a lot of interest in particularly bilateral Jewish-Christian relations. And she was good friends with Rabbi Jeremy Lawrence at the time. And so through her, Rabbi Lawrence joined our committee and was very much a wonderful contributor to the work until he got moved over to Australia.
He chose,
however that worked. But she had been invited to a meeting in Wellington in 2003. It was a meeting that was called some kind of an interfaith forum. And I don't know how she got selected, and I don't know who went because I wasn't invited. But it was some kind of meeting in Wellington about interfaith. And the next year when we were having our meetings with our interfaith council, I just want to mention we have a committee, an elected committee of up to 11 people, and that's the group that runs the organization. Mm. So when I say council, in a lot of ways I'm referring to the committee because it has the most specific identity. And she would come to meetings and she would say things like, you know, they did something in Wellington, but we can do better. We can do better. We can do better. And we heard this for so many months that we were just a new group and kind of trying to find our feet about where we fit in. And we had people from Auckland Council coming and asking us things, and we had people from the human rights asking us things, and we were sort of trying to establish ourselves that if you have a question about religion and society, we're a one-stop shop, because around our table we have quite a few different faiths represented. But she kept on talking about we should do something better than Wellington. So we decided to hold what we'd called the National Interfaith Forum, and we had that in February 2005, and it was a whole weekend, and we used different venues every day. So Friday night we had something in a Hindu temple, Saturday we had something in a Baha'i venue, and Sunday morning we had Professor Paul Morris speaking to us at the Alexander Astle Hall on Gray's Avenue in the Jewish Community Center. And so that was a really good weekend. And I remember to that weekend the Race Relations Commissioner came, and even the Minister of Internal Affairs sent about 8 delegates to our weekend. I think they were checking us out. You know, this was post 9/11, and I think they just wanted to make sure that we weren't subversive in any way, because we've never really seen them since in such a strong showing. But it was a very good forum, and some people from Wellington came, and when they saw how successful it was, by the end of the weekend they put up their hands and said, next year we'll do something in Wellington. And that's how this concept of the National Interfaith Forum as a kind of an ongoing rolling set of conferences developed. So I really think Auckland, we should pat ourselves on the back, because we kind of set the ball rolling. So Wellington had a national forum the next year, and then Waikato had one in 2007, and so it went. So that I'd say in the past 12 years we've had 10 different forums. So you would have come to one of them in Auckland. We hosted one in 2005. We hosted one again in 2009. And then the most recent one we hosted was in 2016. And so each of these was a full weekend with speakers and concerts and seminars. And being Auckland, we always tried to show off the different beautiful faith venues that are here, that someone coming from, you know, Oamaru or Dunedin may have never been to a Hindu temple or a Buddhist temple or something like that. So we, as much as we could, we tried to use the faith venues as hosts for those conferences. So I think that's what you're referring to.
I'd like to know the history of it. Yeah, thank you for that. Just what I wanted to know.
Okay. I think it's interesting, because of the nature of this program, I'd just like to mention that we haven't always had a Jewish person on our committee, just because, as you know, it's a fairly small community in Auckland, and it's not always easy to get a volunteer who's willing. You know, interfaith is kind of another commitment, you know, because if you're already a religious person involved in your own organization, then this is just, you know, another commitment and another meeting. So it hasn't been always easy, but we did, as I say, we had the Rabbi Lawrence at first. And then a couple years later, I was at a meeting of the Auckland Council. That's before the Super City was formed. The old Auckland Council was quite interested in interfaith, and they actually would invite religious leaders together and have large meetings. And from that large meeting, they created what they called an interfaith working group. And we would meet once a month in Auckland Council buildings with, usually it was the deputy mayor, Bruce Hucker, or some of their counselors, and they really wanted to get input from the religious community. And at one of these meetings, I was wearing a name badge, and this very tall, very Maori-looking man came over to me and started talking to me in a foreign language, which I assumed was Maori. And I started thinking to myself, do I look Maori? Why, you know, why is he talking to me in Maori? But I was listening to this language, and I was hearing words that didn't sound Maori at all. And I was very, very confused. And finally, he switched to English, and he said, you know, don't you understand Hebrew? And it turned out this was Steve Daniels. And so I explained to him that I'm with the Interfaith Council, and he liked that idea. And so he actually joined the committee in 2006 and was a very dynamic member of our committee for 4 years. He was the secretary. He coordinated a lot of the meetings, and he was a really delightful person to have on board.
And I have just a social worker.
Yes, yes. He was in his element. And one of the things that happened in the 2009 National Forum, which I don't believe you attended, but you may have heard of this, Steve was on the organizing committee for that forum, and he said, you know, since we've been having these national forums, we've had a lot of dialogue, we've had seminars, we've had panelists, but we've never tried to worship together. I think we should have an interfaith worship service. And it was quite radical, even for us in interfaith, because we always feel interfaith, it's not about trying to infringe on whatever your worship style is. We don't want you to have to change your beliefs or accommodate anyone else's beliefs. We just want to respect you for who you are. So trying to create an actual worship service that would serve people from, you know, 10 or 15 different religions seemed to us a bit of a push.
But a risk.
But, you know, Steve, when he gets behind something, you can't stop him. And so working, he's involved with the Beth Shalom temple, working with the rabbi at the time, he really took it on board to create this worship service. And so the Sunday morning in the temple, in the sanctuary of the temple, we had the first interfaith worship service on a national level. And I'll tell you what, it was fantastic. First of all, the room was packed out. You could not fit another body. People were sitting out into the hallway. And we had about 6 or 7 speakers. We had the actual Catholic bishop, Bishop Pat Dunn, came and spoke. We had a Muslim scholar from Australia, Afroz Ali, who was a great advocate of interfaith. He spoke. And a Sikh speaker, a Hindu speaker. You know, we just had different speakers. They each had only 5 minutes or so, and they were talking about, I think their topic was, you know, what does your faith talk about peace or something quite generic. But we had a Baha'i choir singing, and just the whole thing, the atmosphere was absolutely beautiful. And people were very inspired to be in a Jewish synagogue, because for most of them, if not all of them, non-Jews, they'd never had this opportunity. So it was a fantastic event. It was, again, a groundbreaking event. And I've noticed in other forums following, sometimes they do something similar, sometimes they don't. But, you know, it was the first one, so that was really excellent. And when Steve retired from our committee back in 2010, again, we're always looking, well, we always feel the gap. When there's not a Jewish person on the committee, we always feel the gap, because even though you could say numerically in Auckland, it's not a huge community, but because we, you know, we're looking at the Abrahamic faiths, we're looking, you know, it's like having your grandmother at a birthday dinner. You know, if the Jews aren't there, we feel something missing. So I was always looking to find a good volunteer. And I remember around 2015, I was at an iftar dinner at a Muslim organization, and I saw this lovely youngish Jewish man with his kippah on and his wife, and I went and talked to them, and we found that we both loved Montreal bagels, so we had a lot in common. And that was Rabbi Brent Gutman from, again, Temple Beth Shalom. And he had just come from America at that time. He was settling in, but he obviously, I'd met him at an iftar dinner. He seemed open, and he said he loved interfaith. And he wasn't your your cut-of-the-mill rabbi. I mean, he'd lived in Asia, and he'd done service work overseas, and he was a really broad-minded human being. And so he sort of put me on kind of, well, when I get more settled, more established, I would like to see find out more about this. So I kept to his word, and I met up with him at an event probably 6 or 8 months later, and I said, you know, now? How about now?
If not now, when?
And he said, yes, now. And so he joined our committee, and that was fantastic. He had a lovely, lovely energy, and one of the great events we had under his, when he was on the committee, we organized an evening where we, our topic was the Prophet Abraham. And we had a Muslim speaker, scholar, and you were there. Yes, it was beautiful. It was, again, at Beth Shalom, a Muslim speaker, a Christian speaker, and the rabbi himself. And one of the beautiful things about that evening was before we started the panel discussion, the rabbi actually opened up the sanctuary, and he invited the guests from other faiths to come in, and they actually took the Torah out of where it's kept, and he opened it up with due reverence, and he showed people. And I particularly noticed the Sikh people were very, very taken with this, because recently in our interfaith work, we visited a Sikh temple, and they have their holy book. They treat it like a living being. They put it to bed at night on a pillow. It sounds, you know, a little bit hard to understand, but like they totally respect the word and the way the word is their living, you know, mouthpiece of God, if you will. So they could see the reverence that the Jews had for this scroll was, I think, quite reminiscent for them of
and
their
kissing
own
it.
Faith and kissing it and really valuing it. So it was a beautiful moment, and afterwards some of them said that was fantastic. Like even for them, that experience was the highlight of the evening, more so than the lectures that they heard. So yeah, of course, Brent was only here for several years and has moved back to the U.S.
We did have Beatty, who does a muffin talk for the Catholic community, brought one of her priests, and I brought Rabbi Gutman to the studio.
Fantastic.
And we had the two of them. I got mixed up. I called Father Gutman and Rabbi.
That's funny. But I know that Beata, because I attended it, had the rabbi come and speak about Jewish spiritualism, mysticism at her center. I mean, he was such a good speaker. He was so interesting.
Very erudite.
And very, very good at explaining things. So we do miss him, and at this particular moment, we don't have we don't have a rabbi on our committee, but we have a wonderful representative of the Jewish community. Paul Wilton is active, very active on the committee, and we're really delighted to have him, because we find if we don't have someone from the faith group on the committee, it's just always harder to make those connections, to have events at that place or to find a speaker, because you know, we lose the direct link. So As I say, it's wonderful to have Paul on the committee, and we're going well, and we're doing events all over Auckland.
So what future events have you got coming up?
Well, we just finished up, and I know you came to some of them, Joan. I've seen you in the photos. I saw you in live. We just had a series of public visits to holy places. So we went to two mosques, we went to a Hindu temple, a Catholic church, an Anglican church, a Sikh temple, and a Buddhist temple over a period of 9 days. There were 7 visits organized at specific times, and these were open to the public to just give them a taste, an experience. What is it like in that venue? How do they worship? What are some of their beliefs? And we want to continue this as an annual program, because I think it's a good way on the grassroots to just help people look at something that they wouldn't normally have a chance to experience.
One of the things that I did want you to comment on is that when the Baha'i had their birthday and they invited all the people from the interfaith group, there was a group of young people from France who were hosted by interfaith members. Could you tell us something about them and how they came about? Because I was most impressed with them.
Yes, this was there's a group of four young people, and it's a program that has been going on for a number of years, so I think they are the third tour. And what it is four young, like at university age, French students of different faiths. So those four, there was a Catholic, a Jewish person, a Muslim person, and an atheist.
That's what got me.
Yeah.
Young but atheist.
But she spoke really good English.
Absolutely. She was excellent.
Excellent, yes. And they have quite a lot of funding from different agencies in France, in the government, and also interfaith agencies, and they're on a seven-month tour of 20 nations to look at and record interfaith activities in each of these countries. And what they're doing is they're putting together videos, so that can be seen on, I think it's www.interfaithtour, something like that. It's available on the internet. And so this is their project to try to gain international knowledge and research about what's happening on the ground in interfaith, and then create resources that anyone in the world can use. So we just got an email from them. We didn't know them from a bar of soap. We had to do a bit of research to make sure they were on the level, but they were definitely on the level, and they were delightful young people.
They were absolutely wonderful representatives.
They were
from their country, two boys and two girls.
Yes.
Or three girls.
Yes, and I saw the two girls sitting at your feet at one point at a dinner, and they were looking up at you like, oh, she's just like my grandma.
we were talking about international travel.
Yeah.
And particularly I was asking the atheist girl, couldn't she have just been agnostic? And she said, no, I tried that, and I discovered I was an atheist.
Thank you.
So that's what struck me, that even an atheist had a place in an interfaith group.
Well, you could say representing society, there's certainly, in New Zealand, that's the largest growing faith group, is people that don't, wouldn't say necessarily that they're atheists, but they don't affiliate with any religion. So I think, they're just trying to keep things broad.
So, and the fact that they're hosted in all these different countries by members of an interfaith group. Yes. So the network is much larger than I envisaged.
Yes, well, because they had quite good backing from a number of interfaith groups, including URI, United Religions Initiative, which is a worldwide interfaith organization. I think they had sort of a connecting point to find people, and then they would in advance say, look, we're coming, can you help us? We need a place to stay, and we need someone to show us how to get around.
Actually, you've just pricked a memory. What was the international?
United Religions Initiative, URI. URI, because the URI executive director was our keynote speaker at the 2016 National Interfaith Forum, and he was wonderful, wasn't he?
He was, and it just clicked that was quite an outstanding, that was a badge and everything. Yes, again, I learnt a lot because I didn't even know there was such an organization, and if so many religions are working together, and one of their values is social justice, and one of the other values, because with social justice you need peace, that's such a large movement of like-minded, warm-hearted people, gives one hope for the future.
I hope so. Yes, I do think there's a lot of hope.
And what have you got planned for the future?
Well, as I say, we're going to continue this Exploring Sacred Spaces project probably late next year. In the end of March, we have an international speaker coming from Scotland she's a PhD, and she has been involved with a lot of interfaith work throughout Europe. And in Scotland, the government has an interfaith body that meets with Parliament, and she's going to be coming here and giving an evening lecture about developments in interfaith in Europe. So we're looking forward to that.
Well, thank you very much, Ruth, and thank you for listening. Don't forget to listen next Sunday at 10:10 to Radio Shalom, coming to you through 104.6 FM. And if you've missed this program, you can go to www.planetaudio.org.nz/Radio Shalom. We would like to thank our sponsor, Nature Bee.